Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Rich Hudson.
Hello there.
Now there are many games coming out across the rest of March and across April as well. It seems like there's been a big old drought for the most of 2020. I don't know if you guys are feeling that as well.
I'm just on the floor waiting for games, just playing everything that I've played before.
Sustain me.
The only thing that wasn't delayed that I was looking forward to originally was the brain training on the Switch, and apparently that's pretty mess.
So it's not the best, yeah.
I'm just like, I've fished out my copy on the DS and been playing that.
It's probably better. I ended up buying the brain training on the Switch, not what we're going to talk about for the rest of this pod, but I did buy it. You get a nice little stylus, and that's the best thing.
I was
thing
very
about
excited
it.
By that when I heard it was just the same thing. I'm like, well, I've already got it on DS, I don't need it on this.
No, it's not very good, but yeah.
I almost got the stylus for Mario Maker 2, but I just realized I had one anyway, so I didn't need it.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you didn't get the Mario Maker 2 stylus?
No, because I had a pen already.
You were so excited for that stylus, man.
I know, but it was another 10 quid, and I was like,
I'm disappointed in you.
Of all the styluses that they've got going, the one that comes with brain training is a really thick one. It's like a pen. Ooh, like a big old pen.
Like
one of those old pens.
On the top, they should have his head on the top. So it's
Missed a trick there.
I'd be a big fan. But anyway, games coming back across March and April. So we have basically divvied up the 10 biggest ones across March and April. And we ranked them separately. And then I've collated stuff to get our blind ranking combined together. So I'm just going to reveal what our top 10 is in reverse order. The thing that came out with only 9 points between us, because whatever you put at number one got 10 points, descending all the way down to the 10th position. I will say the words eventually. Yes, the thing that came in at number 10 is Nioh 2, coming on the 13th of March with only 9 points.
Yes. after the Hellscape, which was Sekiro earlier in January.
Benroy's vendetta against Sekiro continues.
I've never heard about this.
It's not something that I would like to venture to, and to be honest, I got the original one for free on PS Plus and still haven't launched it, so I can't play this one yet, can I?
I used to adore Nioh, and I still think it's an incredibly good action game, but having played Sekiro, it knocked it right down the rankings on it. I thought Nioh was one of the best Souls games across the whole generation, and then I played Sekiro, and I was like, okay, this is the level of blade-to-blade combat that I wanted, and that I thought like Nioh was doing pretty well, and then Sekiro just wiped the floor with it. Rich, did you try a little bit?
I haven't played it. That's why it's at the bottom for me.
I think even outside that, though, we can talk about the fact that there are so many of these games in a row,
yeah.
And how appealing they are in general, because I think if you've just done one, like you've just finished Sekiro,
or
even for me who tries to play, I go from one to the next, there's something unappealing about going like, okay, I know I'm going to be in for a hellish time.
I think you're right, just the oversaturation of Souls clones, like there have been quite a few. It's been getting me into the Souls genre generally, mm-hmm. but Sekiro for me, I didn't even get past the Chained Ogre. That's how few hours I have put into that game. Hey, let's buy another one that's just Sekiro again. I'm like, cool, that's genuinely not interesting.
That Chained Ogre, only the beginning.
You went past the Chained Ogre and Johnny regretted
it. I'll quote the ghost of Josh Brown, shall we say, is anyone hyped for Nioh 2?
I honestly didn't even realize it was coming out. And the thing is, I do think that it'll be incredibly tight. I love all the stance switching stuff that the first one had. I like that you can pick and choose like different light attacks and heavy attacks based on what stance and how fast you attack and things like that. And I love its loot system, but it's kind of like a stealth release. It's just sort of dropping like in a couple of days.
I know there were a lot of people that were very excited because the announcement of Nioh 2 was really sudden, mm-hmm. and like loads of people got very, very excited for it. But I think it's not had the sort of mainstream attention that Sekiro had, but that's mainly because it's coming from Software and Hideo Miyazaki, which means it's like, yeah, he's going to get the big bucks in, a lot of eyes on it, and Nioh 2 is just not getting the same, even at EGX.
Yeah.
It wasn't getting that much attention. in the Sony area. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more just catering for a niche audience. I think the people who are excited for it are very excited. And for those of us who are kind of on the outside of it or on the outskirts of it, are just like, eh.
I know. I think I might give it a shot. The first one was incredibly hard. I believe in Team Ninja as a dev. I'm curious what they've done. And hopefully they've got more like newer systems. Like I said, the loot system is really cool, where you defeat the ghosts of other players, then you can fight for the loot that they had when they died. I think that's a really cool system. So I kind of hope they've bulked it out. And next thing was at number nine was Gears Tactics. This is coming 28th of April.
Yes.
And it got 10 points. So it's very slightly above Nioh 2. Benroy, you're a big Gears fan.
Yeah, Gears combined. I can't speak. Gears combined with XCOM. This is the swear word that I can't say.
You can't say this.
This is the stuff. This is what I need in my life. But shamefully, it's only coming to PC first and Xbox later.
Okay.
But
interesting.
The idea of like Gears of War is a cover based shooter, yeah?
Yeah.
So obviously in XCOM, it's always about plopping your people around and hiding them behind things and taking turns and shooting the stuff. So it just worked well. Like, the idea of putting that but with a Gears skin. And give me some background onto Kate's dad. Let's go.
I was going to say, I didn't know how much it was going to tie into the overall canon. Are they going to dive into like the history of Kate?
I think
Gears 5's protagonist.
I think it's a rumor, but that the main protagonist in that one's going to be Kate's dad.
Okay.
But yes, it's set back as the Locust first emerge, I believe.
Okay.
So we're going right back because it's just like a sort of a prequel set in between
Emergence Day.
Yes.
I like the idea of it. I mean, like, I'm a like huge XCOM fan. I think we've all played like varying amounts of different strategy games and stuff. It's like, it's a nice deviation or a different deviation for what you'd expect from the Gears formula. And it's very much Microsoft going like, well, we can do this thing on the side as well. They tried it with Halo Wars.
I was going to say Halo Wars did the same. It's a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, this has more going for it than Halo did.
I think it's just, as Ben Roy's excited for, tying into the lore, just giving you more of the same kind of thing.
And more like, XCOM style gameplay. Like, because XCOM 2... We were pretty much guaranteed not to get an XCOM free for so long because that DLC they dropped was basically like, well, we're not going to get to do a free for a while, so have this.
War of the Chosen is immaculate as well.
So give me more in that vein.
Yeah, I feel what you call the dude that was on board with XCOM 1 and 2 that's now doing his other side thing. There's another XCOM style game that's done the tactics thing. But yeah, I like the idea of them trying this. And I wasn't a huge Halo Wars fan, but maybe Gears can kind of tick that box in a way that couldn't.
For me, it's the fact that it's more of the XCOM style rather than like Command and Conquer. Mm. That's what I'm really here for.
Mm-hmm. I hope they have chainsaw kills that you have to somehow build up to and burn a resource to do. Next one down is Bleeding Edge coming in at number 8. This has 11 points and it's coming out on the 24th of March. Bleeding Edge, I didn't play the beta for it, but having watched the gameplay, it looks immaculate.
I forgot it even existed. Not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, it's coming out at the end of March, but the fact that it's Ninja Theory, it's the team from DMC.
It's weird because I was expecting the sequel to Hellblade to be coming first. When they said, hey, this is Team Ninja doing... Ninja Theory doing this, it's like, oh, that's very different.
Yeah.
Like, not saying that devs can't like branch out and try something different, but this is like very different.
They're definitely using a lot of the, because this is going to be exclusive to PC and Xbox. Like obviously Microsoft acquired Ninja Theory like a couple of years ago, and this is like their first major project, and it's very Overwatch. It's very like, I got a lot of like Splatoon vibes from the gameplay, like a lot of team focused stuff and kind of like taking over different territories and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's like all the characters are like hyper varied. There's a lot of diversity on show, which is really good to see. What do you think, Benroy, in terms of general hype? You'd forgot it existed as well.
I forgot it existed, and I just brushed up on looking at some gameplay, some of the trailers, and I'm just gonna say my two cents, doesn't look like it's for me.
Why
I think trying to delve into that genre is still hard because not that there's any new releases, but now like Overwatch got added to that pool of those types of games, the heavy multiplayer, go back to it all the time games have come, so trying to add a new one on top of that is really hard. I think the most recent one would be Overwatch, if not Fortnite, but then you've got that Apex. Kind of adds to the pool. Apex kind of adds to the pool of like CSGO and Siege and stuff like that as well. I think it's just another, as much as it may be the most amazing thing in the world, it's like people said even Lawbreakers played really well.
But it's
still trying to get into a market that's like, this isn't a market that's a spur of the moment. This will last for maybe a year or so. This is like these kind of games are there to be played for a good 10 years after their release. And I just think it's so hard to break into that. And being a platform exclusive makes it even harder for it to really stick.
The thing is, though, I say that this is it's a Game Pass game. So people could jump
on. You might as well try
I'll have a look in there, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But as Rich said, I've got my PUBGs, I've got my Battlefront 2s, I've got my PUBGs, I said it twice, Rainbow Sixes. I've kind of got my roster of games that I rotate in and out for online purposes. And like, I like the idea of the cool skateboard they've got in there, but
there's a hoverboard in it.
Yeah. Just looking in there though, it doesn't look like it's going to break my rotation of the multiplayer sort of lineup I have going on at the moment.
The thing with like the combat, because it's the old 2013 DMC Devil May Cry team that they released the reboot of Devil May Cry that everyone hated at the time, or it was very divisive anyway. I was one of the people who thought it was terrible back then. And they've got that team that are now coming back doing this sort of, you know, like mass multiplayer arena type thing. But the combat system is very Devil May Cry. It's lots of like, you know, over the top melee combos. It is in third person. It just seems really promising. But like you said, it's such a crowded market. The hero shooter or the hero aesthetic.
Just heavy multiplayer soul influence. Thing it's just crowded, and I think that's what devs need to look at. They can come up with the best idea, but it's like, if you're not gonna get a player base of people that will stick to it and have it either as their primary or in their roster of multiplayer games, you're in with no chance.
I was on Rainbow Six last night, and I'm still fine playing that game. It's just still enjoyable.
Well, it's not like related to this like too much, but we were on about at lunchtime, like the amount of us still playing Modern Warfare.
Still playing Modern Warfare.
Yeah, and it's just like you don't, like, there's only so many hours that you have outside of whatever you do for the majority of that day where you can squeeze something else in that has dailies and you're supposed to play it every day. So that's coming out on the 24th of March. Number six is Animal Crossing New Horizons, 20th of March, which got 13 points.
I think there's a lot of Animal Crossing fans listening. Yes. Just going, what do you mean it's number six?
It should be number one. I think Animal Crossing, I'm just psyched for. I think it's going to be the relaxing sort of, you know, the game you have on the side. You're forever dipping in. It's when I sort of play Stardew Valley bit by bit every single day, or Rocket League or something. It's something that bolsters everything else. Like, we're going to get to the likes of Doom and that kind of stuff. But I don't know if you guys are even planning on getting Animal Crossing, but...
My history of Animal Crossing was the fact, I think I told you this earlier, that I had a PS2 growing up, and then we got a GameCube because my sister wanted it, and then she didn't play anymore, so then I played the Animal Crossing.
Right.
I played all the exclusives on it, and I think my time was there and done with that first Animal Crossing. Like, I don't know if I need any more.
You can catch some more fish.
Yeah, but
go shake a tree.
I could catch fish in, like, say, I could join you in those Red Dead Online adventures.
Hell yeah, you could
catch fish from there.
Oh, but catching fish in Animal Crossing is more fun.
Yeah, I had that sluggish sort of like urge to go and actually design a home and like set this sort of village up, like the whole terraforming, like. Places and be able to do whatever you want. This sounds really good, and the idea of just like Nintendo taking off the shackles and just going full out, do what you want. You don't have to set your little creature or person out in the sun for ages to tan to change your skin color in a weird way that they used to do.
Wow.
Just literally take what you want and build what you want and be who you want. I think that's a good idea, but for me, it is not going to fly in this busy season.
It is, that's
games.
The thing. Like, I mean, we haven't even got to like the halfway mark and the real big hitters. But for Animal Crossing, like I think, like I said, it's going to be a really nice little casual thing. But I worry because the last Animal Crossing game that Nintendo put out was Pocket Camp on the Android or on iOS.
It's going to connect to that, right? As well.
Yeah, but the thing that I don't want is microtransactions that speed up timers, because Pocket Camp was like, this thing will take 20 minutes unless you want to burn some money and get a token, it'll save the time. I don't want any of that to come across. And looking at Pokemon Sword and Shield, that idea of, like, you know, it's the first home console or the Switch version of X franchise. For me, Sword and Shield was like a massive letdown. I didn't feel like they went big enough with it.
What's the name of the
I don't
guy?
Want that for Animal Crossing.
Was the name of the guy that you pay all the bells to?
Tom Nook.
Tom Nook and Rossetti are going to come after you if you change your timer on the Switch.
I know. I love that they've got Mr. Rossetti has to rethink his job role because you can't reset the console or whatever it is anymore. A ton of charm. It's been such a long way since the last massive Animal Crossing, like 2013 or whatever, for New Leaf. I think obviously that's going to land. We'll end up doing like maybe a more specific podcast on it, because I know that Zoe's a big fan and she's counting down to it as well.
Is this the last big Nintendo franchise to come that's been handheld limbo for a while to come over and onto the Switch?
Metroid, kind of, because we've only had Metroid games on. I mean, we had the Wii games, but they kind of don't count.
No, I mean,
obviously the last one we had was the 3DS game, so Metroid kind of is.
There is still
one.
That sort of like, they could do with doing like a better F-Zero. Star Fox hasn't had a new one since like the Wii U, I guess. But whatever. Yeah, Animal Crossing is on the 20th of March. Number six. I'm going to stop doing
number
numbers. Number five?
Yes.
I think that's what we're on. Is Ori and the Will of the Wisps on the 11th of March, which will be out in like 2 days or something by that time. Now, you guys, I don't know if you finished the first Ori.
No.
Oh, so beautiful.
I know. I know of it.
Beautiful game, Rich.
I know of it. I've heard a lot about it.
It's so good. But in the new one, because the original one was like, you know, very Metroidvania. You sort of, you know, you were going, getting certain abilities so you can explore this whole world. But in the new one, in Will of the Wisps, it seems way more melee focused. You've got this like energy blade and you're whacking dudes left, right, and center. And it just seems like a way more like hands on kind of thing. It's less exploration, more combat. And I kind of hope they've got the balance right for that. Because apparently they've changed up a lot of the way the checkpoints and stuff work. Because in the original traditional one, you would burn your special meter to make a checkpoint. So if there was a really hard platforming run or whatever, you can, you know, you can burn that and like make like a custom checkpoint. Benroy, are you psyched for a little bit of the Ori? I know you've not played it either, but maybe you're going to play this one.
Oh, I'm so psyched to play this game before I actually go back and play the first one.
Good.
It's on Game Pass though.
Yes.
Yeah, it's so actually, you probably should play it.
I would say it's in my library.
I was going to say, if you, I mean, you've got what? It's like 2 days or something until it comes out. You could go home.
I mean, it's
right
less
now.
Than 8 hours, so I could run through and smash out.
You totally
or
could.
I could keep grinding away at certain games and their trophies.
Stop playing. What's the thing you're playing at the moment? Resident Evil. Yeah, more runs in The Last of Us. But yeah, we'll wait and see what happens with Ori. We might end up doing something more based on Xbox exclusives for the rest of the year. Because the next one, number four, I believe, I think we have too many games.
Yeah, number four. No, there were 10 games.
Okay, good. Is the next one down is Predator Hunting Grounds.
Here we go. This is it. There we go.
You know, I'm weirdly keen for this because I've been a big fan of asymmetrical multiplayer games after playing a lot of Dead by Daylight when I first came across that.
It's good that we're sitting on the opposite ends of the table because I'm a Friday the 13th guy.
Yeah, more I was going to say, you are. So, you know. I'm literally editing a video right now about Friday the 13th. I it's like, cool, this, yeah. I'm going to do a video about a game I don't know that well. But like, asymmetrical multiplayer, I think, is brilliant. There's so many games that are doing it now. You've got stuff like Resident Evil Resistance coming out with 3, yes. which we'll get to. Mm-hmm. And it's a really cool thing when they get it right, and I think that's why I'm intrigued and hyped about to see how it comes out, because the thing about asymmetrical is if it works, it works. Like Dead by Daylight has done so well because they've done so much balancing and it plays incredibly well, whereas something like even Death Garden, which was made by Behavior, who did Dead by Daylight, they tried another asymmetrical multiplayer game which is more of a shooter, and it fell flat on its ass.
Can you remember Evolve didn't land very well.
Friday the 13th has got a dedicated fan base, but it's not as big as DBD.
But the sad reason for that is because they screwed over the licensing.
Yeah.
And as I said to Sky earlier, like Predator, obviously the Predator game was signed dotted line ages ago and that game's coming out. But now Disney, the big mouse, Big Mickey, has the licenses. So is Mickey now going to pull the plug on any other DLC that's when this game comes out?
That's the same people as well. It'll funnel.
Yeah.
Same devs.
Could get screwed over twice with licensing. It would suck.
I have to imagine that going into this, like, yeah, because you can read into the, if you go in Google or whatever, you can read the whole history of how the license was handled and how they couldn't continue it. And they had to pretty much cancel or can whole portions
all
of the game.
All the DLC got cancelled. They can keep keeping the game clean, getting rid of the bugs and quality of life, but they can't release any content for it. And it just, it's, you know, it has a fan base of X amount of players, but it's not substantial enough. And because there's no future to the game, people are slowly falling off it. But the fact they've got Predator now to go on instead, I'm genuinely intrigued to see how it plays out.
That's what I mean, is I have to imagine if you're that team and you're gearing up for the next IP, and it's, I mean, it would have overlapped. I don't know how much it would have overlapped with when Friday the 13th started falling apart. But if you're going into all those new contract negotiations,
I think it was like 2016, 17, 18, it came out, something like that.
Right.
That's the problem with the fact that the Friday the 13th license, I think I own part of that license. Like, it's so spread around everywhere. So many films are all over the place. Mm-hmm. But because they did put Friday the 13th on PS Plus, which I think was a nice little booster to them to help with development of Predator. But in that game, if I can't like customize what the Predator says and go, "Do you want some candy?"
There has to be a candy button. Yeah. Otherwise, what are we even doing?
If I can't say, "Do you want some candy?" to someone before I murder them, then what is the point of that game?
I'm only going to get that game so I can play it as a Predator. And it's obviously going to be dependent on the amount of the way it handles its little hoppers and buckets, whether you get put, if you can pick to be Predator.
It would then just be a case of matchmaking and hoping you get put with a bunch of survivors.
If I was them as well, I would have already, of course, they've sort of planned some sort of DLC thing going, but I would have tried to get like, say, bit for the aliens and bring like an alien DLC in like a year later or something. Just imagine.
Could do. I mean, you know, putting licensed characters into these asymmetrical games is a thing. Like when you look at all the licenses within Dead by Daylight, it's mental.
That's flown.
It's
like, it's
wicked.
So huge.
Honestly, playing as Michael Myers in Dead by Daylight is the best thing. It's so good.
So so Predator Hunting Grounds is the end of April. That's the 24th. Next one down is Half-Life Alyx on the 23rd of March, which still seems insane that the new Half-Life game is finally arriving.
You actually have the technology to play it. I invested in VR last year on a PSVR, loved it, and then it was like, hey, do you need a PC headset now to play Half-Life Alyx? I was like, oh dear, yes I do. So I've now got one of those as well, which I finally played off literally the other day.
Good.
I'm very excited for it. I kind of, when they first announced it, because I've been keeping up with a guy on YouTube called Tyler McVicker. Big up to you. Valve News Network has been keeping up with, genuinely his first ever video on YouTube was him talking about this new game coming from Valve about Half-Life, be it a normal Half-Life 3 or the VR game. And all the way up till now, so it's like, it's been a big surprise, a big spectacle, to see it was announced. I kind of knew it was coming because there's like so much leading up to it.
Oh yeah, there's tons of rumors.
But I kind of fell off it a bit. I was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then now they've released, literally the other week, they released the first gameplay from it. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Do you think that they're going to be able to revolutionize VR control the same way that Half-Life 2 did with physics?
Yes, I think they can, because there has been evidence that it is possible. There's a game called Boneworks on Steam made by, I can't remember what they're called.
Jonathan Bone.
Probably.
Yes.
John Bone. And they have done it is aesthetically and sort of the feeling, the tone is very Half-Life.
Okay.
Even down to almost like VR headset head crabs that jump on your head and put you into another VR game. It's very meta.
Oh, that's cool.
It's really cool. Horrible. So I moved some boxes out of the way and it jumped at me and I properly shrieked. Horrible. It's been done that you can do a game in VR that's that in-depth. Even something like Blood and Truth on PSVR, like that kind of, okay, this actually works as a proper game. That's kind of what Valve are doing. And
sorry, Colin Salmon's Blood and Truth.
Good, yes. Have to appease our Lord.
There he is.
Big Sal.
But it is possible to revolutionize it. And I think from what we've heard from people who've had hands-on with the game, it really is something quite special, so I'm very excited to see how it plays out. I really hope they release it for PSVR as well.
I will buy a PSVR. Just they announce it. I'm buying it.
Yeah, I think they might do. I think because Valve haven't done, because they've obviously done a lot of VR over the last couple of years, but haven't done any full-fledged VR games. I've only done a couple of experiences, which are brilliant, don't get me wrong.
I am curious how much they design something that can only be played on their first-party hardware.
Not necessarily, because you, as long as it works on Steam VR, which basically every headset you can plug into a PC does, you can play it. I have an Oculus Rift S. I do not have the money for a Valve Index, as I would like one.
Yeah, I was thinking that was the one that you invested in.
No. I haven't got 1,100 quid lying around.
Just pay it off.
Paying like 300 over 6 months, I can get away with that, but not so much like 1,100 quid for a Valve. Yeah,
for me, I'm just so excited to go back. This is set in City 17, right?
Yeah.
I'm just so excited to go back to City 17, go back to that world of Half-Life and just experience it again, because it's
been
just
a long time.
Something that was ripped away from me as a child and I've just never had it back.
Honestly, like I need to send you this actually. So occasionally when I'm working and I need some background noise, I put on an hours of ambience in City 17 with the Overwatch voice in the background and the sirens and stuff. And it's like, there's just so much nostalgia in those sounds.
Cool. And just the officers that chase you, their voices come on.
And then just like, I've already said this, I said this on Twitter, like when they first released the gameplay, it's like, I just want to stand in the middle of City 17 and just take it
Yeah,
and
like, look around.
I'm genuinely intrigued as to whether a VR game could make me cry. Not only in terms of what happens in the game, because poor Tyler Mavica had the whole game spoiled for him before it's even out. And he said it's the best Half-Life game that's ever been made.
Technology's come a long way.
And it's like, I cry in that game, be it because of just being in City 17 and seeing it almost with my own eyes, or just what happens in the game.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I would give it a solid 10 to make me cry into my headset.
You think we're going to see the fall of Ravenholm?
I don't know whether we'll go to Ravenholm. But apparently you need to have played all Half-Life games to understand this one. So I think there's going to be some time jumping. And from what Tyler said about it being the best Half-Life game ever, and there were a few lines in the trailer reminiscent to the cliffhanger of episode two.
Okay.
There's a lot going for this.
Also,
so.
See, Gabe Newell himself didn't say this, but I'm going to say he did. This isn't their last venture back into Half-Life. I think this is
their testing the waters with it. The fact that the Valve Index is sold out, it's so hard to get one. Now, I've got a friend who just wants the controllers, and I think it's today at 5 o'clock. As of recording this, apparently they're going to go back in stock. Yeah. And he's just sitting there with like a wad of cash in his hand going, okay, I need to get these controllers.
Everyone getting hand sanitizer and toilet roll. Yeah, he's waiting for this.
I think Oculus and HTC have been selling crap loads of headsets because, you know, and they knew this would happen. Mm-hmm. It's not why they've done it. To sell headsets. It's a happy coincidence with the production of this game. But I think they've really, really have really done well. Yeah. I'm really excited.
If I had a PC that was like, I don't know, I have a MacBook, but if I had a PC at all that could run this game, I would have bought a headset. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's not the case. So if they do, like I said, they bring it to PSVR, I'm on that straight away. I need this game.
I'll tell you what, after I finish it, I'll bring my headset in. We'll install it on the work gaming PC, and you can stay here after work and play it.
Yeah, just with the headset over your eyes for like eight hours until you come back out.
Apparently it is the same length as Half-Life 2.
Okay.
So that's like, you know, 8-10 hours maybe.
I'm so good. I think there'll be some major feature in there they haven't even shown off yet where it'll be to do with having full interaction in a 3D space in VR. That'll blow our minds in regards to how you
interact. That's entirely what it's based on. It's why they've said we can't release this as a desktop game. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Like, yeah.
And that's not saying, oh yeah, go buy a headset. Give us more money because I think genuinely we've built this from the ground up. And I don't see that as a scummy thing from Valve because I think when Valve do their games properly, as you know, they really care about them.
That's the thing. It's been so long since Valve have been held up. The last
full game they would have technically done that wasn't CSGO or Dota was Portal 2, and that was 2011.
And that was the best game of the year.
It's game of the decade.
Ah, same year as Skyrim.
Best game of the year?
No.
Modern Warfare 3, baby.
maybe. Next one down is Final Fantasy VII coming on the 10th of April. That got 20 points. Now, we don't necessarily need to focus on this too much because our next ones are rather large games, and also me, Jules, and Mr. Cleary already did a breakdown based on the gameplay that we've put in, or the gameplay that we played down in London and stuff. So we broke a little bit of that down. But for the two of you who aren't necessarily massive Final Fantasy VII fans when you were growing up, do you see yourselves checking out the new one?
I will see what the reception is. I'm very curious.
It'll be me screaming from the rooftops every day.
It's a game that you always hear, like, oh, you've got to go back and play, you've got to go back and play it.
But that's
like,
exactly my voice.
It's like me saying to someone, you've got to go and play Resident Evil 1 on the PS1, which controls like garbage and would be garbage for people to play
now.
I don't know
if it's the same because Final Fantasy VII's aged way better than Resident 1.
I don't know. It has. Probably has. It's really good. But as I was going to say, I am curious and I will see. I haven't even downloaded the demo yet. I want to see how it is received and I will jump into it over the summer, I believe.
Well, I am one step ahead of you because I do have the demo installed right now and it's totally because I wanted to play it, not because a friend of Amy's wanted to come over and play it. It doesn't have a PS4. that's totally why I've got it. But it's there. I've seen, I watched people play it and it's like, okay, I'm kind of intrigued. Mm-hmm. As we said on the podcast the other week about like turn-based stuff, it's never been something I've really been massively into, but when it translates well to doing it in a more 3D action-oriented space, I'm more willing to give it a go. As I've had, you know, a million opportunities and a million different platforms to try the original Final Fantasy VII, but I just haven't taken the plunge and I don't really know whether I want to cough up money to do so in case I just go, yep, I'm not game for this.
I think because they have overhauled it so much, like you can play it, it's just an all-out Devil May Cry style action game and you can just hold the shoulder buttons and it'll bring up the mini menu instead of pausing time and whatever. Yeah. But I love the fact that they have hybridized it, so if you want to, you can pause, allocate, you know, you can give your teammates actions and commands and stuff and then you can still control your guy in real time. For me, it's just a dream come true. I can't believe they're actually doing
I think that's probably why it's so high up on the hype meter even for us. Like, we know how much of a big deal this is to a lot of people. Like, when they first revealed it at E3 2015, like people were crying about it, and I can completely understand that. Like, I should be in the same position for Half-Life Alyx, but I've been more annoyingly, I've been more excited for another game we're going
to
talk about.
Yes, we will get
to that position for RE2.
Yeah, last year. So it's like, but I can completely appreciate why it's a big deal, and I will give it a go because it's got a demo. The reason why I bought Resi 2 Remake in the first place was because the demo was so good.
Yeah, the demo for Final Fantasy VII is immaculate as well. The thing that I'm super curious on is obviously they've split the main game up into X number of installments, and we still don't know how many. So at this point, I'm kind of curious just how the hell that thing ends. It's like if you took any one of those other games, you took Half-Life 2, you took Resident Evil 2, something that we know as a fully formed product, and you go, okay, where can we split that to then release it multiple installments or multiple full games? How the hell do you then make that feel natural?
How many years is this going to last before they get it all out?
Well, exactly. Well. And but I mean,
PlayStation 6, baby.
PlayStation Eternal. I do like the idea that this is one of the only ways that they can get a new populace, a new fan base, like a new demographic interested in Final Fantasy VII as a story, as a piece of lore, as this ongoing thing. Because when we all played it as kids, it felt as big as a now multi-installment release, you know, will be for like a new audience. So I'm curious how the hell they managed to, you know, make that feel remotely natural, just crowbarring in, like just fade to black. By the way, we'll be back in 5 months or something. But I have to imagine that when the Midgar segment ends, they'll announce the release date of part two, because they haven't said that thing yet. And I just think that if you were someone who had bought this and didn't realize that it was a multi-installment thing, if it just fades to black in credits after what feels like the opening eighth of that game, it's going to be the weirdest, you know, outrage ever. So our top two, this was obvious when we sat down, because we're all kind of hyped for these things in different amounts. But at number two is Resident Evil 3, coming on the 3rd of April with 24 points. This is Ben Roy's number one.
Yes, I think you were there when we had the PlayStation Access was playing, and I lost my I lost myself.
You lost your stuff.
Proverbial poop.
When they did the Resident Evil.
At the beginning,
the
didn't
noise.
They?
When they, we thought they it was the little sting, and then I go, oh, now here's the single player portion of Resident Evil Resistance. And I was like, what? What's going on? But the fact that they released this game like they did before, like a year after, pretty much, I'm just. Good on them. Good on them for like just developing both of these
like
games
an
at the same time.
Turnaround.
I feel it feels almost weird to think it was only like last January that we were playing Resi 2.
Yeah,
like it's mental. Hats off to Capcom for pulling this off.
I know,
especially if it's good.
I guess because the sheer amount of work, the amount of like the engine, they got everything up and running. It's mostly environmental work that they've had to do.
Yeah. So instead, I'm kind of getting my wish here. Instead of like the city filling like a few corridors, even though you're outside. Apparently, it's going to be a lot bigger, and like maybe you can go down a different street if you want.
Quasi-open world.
Yeah, like. A kind of like a city rather than, you know, but it's all sort of like wide linear towards one place, which I'm curious how that will work in survival horror, but then we'll have to see.
But the fact it can't be like the Evil Within 2.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of levels in Evil Within 2 that are open.
There'll
world
be
horror,
less
yeah.
open spaces, though, I think, because Raccoon's more built up.
Comparatively.
Not really any parks and stuff.
But, I mean, Evil Within 2, like, if anyone hasn't played that game does open world horror in
amazingly.
A way that nothing else does. It's phenomenal. And the idea of just hiding jump scares around a random corner, or just, like, you know, you don't realize that you've actually wandered into a set piece and things like that. That game has so many strengths to it. It's just that I wish the whole game was like that, because I think Days Gone does open world horror as well, but not as well.
The thing is, this one, I am skeptical, because I don't think many people are so hyped, because the fact that we had one just last year, and Nemesis, the more and more I see of Nemesis, it looks harder and harder.
The thing is,
it's going to get people to rage quit, I think.
Yeah, I put this way down on my list. I had it right down at like number six or something. I worry about the Nemesis stuff, because he just looks annoying.
We've seen him like almost like leaping forward like an arcade out of nowhere, just like how are you going to get around this?
The dodge apparently. Though,
well, the dodge system actually looks like it's vastly improved from the original, which was just like a quick shudder. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you get sort of a nice little prompty flash and it slows down the camera, you can sort of get around behind him and run.
The thing that makes me worried is that in Resi 2, the quote-unquote worst part of Resi 2 was when all you wanted to do was, you know, crank something or do a password or whatever, do something where you need to be in our room for like 5 minutes and Mr. X is in the room with you. And you sort of do that awkward thing where you sort of kite him around the room and you try to get him to move away from you and you shoot him a bit and he goes down. And it's just, he was a nuisance at that point. Yeah, and it was just really annoying. And I think they've made a whole game out of that. And
That's kind of the thing for me. Like when I first played Resi 2 Remake, because that was my first Resi game, we did a pod on that ages ago.
Yes.
When Mr. X does show up, I was thinking, okay, this is the part of the game that I feel like I'm going to get really annoyed about. And thankfully I didn't. So it's like, I have faith that they won't have that, because I didn't play Resi 3 either. I know very little about it. So I'm going into this more as an excited, I really like Resi 2 Remake. I really hope I like Resi 3 Remake. But yeah, I remember at one point in the campaign in Leon A, where you have to go into the clock tower and do some cranking stuff.
Yes.
And I was like, right, let's get Mr. X right to the other end of the police station, get all the way back here and do it. And then I was like reading through some online stuff, and it was like, Mr. X can't even enter this room.
Yeah.
So it's the one room that he can't.
So apparently he can't. And I was there like trying my best to think, right, okay, how can I make it so I give myself more than enough time? Turns out he could have just been at the door.
The first time
it didn't matter.
I was the exact same. And then you realise, wait, you can't actually,
he can't actually get in here.
Yeah, they do some really good sound effect work at that point to make you think that he's like above you and stuff.
I'm really excited for Resi 3. Mm. I think it's going to be one of those things I'm not really thinking about it much until it comes out. Mm. I was kind of the same with Resi 2. I thought, oh, this looks kind of interesting. And then as soon as I played the demo, that was me sold, literally. I played the demo, bought the game. Because I played the demo on release day.
Yes.
Bought the game straight after and then just played it all night.
I'm kind of excited for like a load of games this year. But the thing is, I thought there's such a big shadow. I know it's not we're talking about yet, but Last of Us 2 is casting such a shadow of my life that I can't. I keep thinking about that rather than like Resident Evil.
I'm kind of the same with our next thing, but thankfully this has been done.
Yeah,
the
same as well. And I can't wait to then finally play this and be like, Jill Valentine is hopefully back, and we then might get some ties into other games and maybe some hints towards something else, because they're going to change a few bits up as well. So
I'm curious if they do end up remaking RE4 using this engine, using this tech with all the different character models, and they like that was like the big one, the big Resident
I would like
one
Code
of
Veronica
the 2000s
first, but I can see if they skip that.
I would take Code Veronica over redoing 4. As one last thing for Resident Evil, as a huge fan, what do you think of the split between, like, because RE3 is almost the beginning of the action focused stuff. I know 4 gets held up as that, but in 3 it's like you are fighting Nemesis a lot. Like, do you think that it's just, for me, it's not going to be as scary because you're going up against this big meat-headed super soldier?
There are going to be sections, like there are sewer sections and there are sections where you have to turn like certain cranks and these weird, like, I can't remember their names. They used to look like hunters in the old game. Now they look more insectoid.
Right.
There are going to be sections like that which are going to be slow-paced and like you've got to creep around.
Okay.
But for the most part, yes, it's going to be running from sort of like through the streets from door to door to try and avoid zombies, dogs, and Big Nemesis.
And Big Nem dropping in. So our number one is obviously Doom Eternal and brackets Doom 64, which got 27 points, coming out on the 20th of March. It's only 11 days, Richard.
I can't contain my... Genuinely, I am, for lack of a better phrase, I am buzzing my tits off
good
for this game. Like I there was a part of me that worried because it was like I've genuinely, as soon as 2020 ticked over, it was like, right, it's this year. It's like Doom tweeted happy Doom year and I'm like, oh my god, it is.
You guys know
I've genuinely just been excited. I've been so excited this entire time, and I was worried that by the time we got to this point where we're like, where we are 11 days away, that'll be more like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'm good. But I'm still like proper
bouncing
buzzing
off the walls.
I am genuinely, it gets to next Friday, I'm on a half day.
I love that you
next Friday I have booked time I'm off for this game. I've got my collector's edition arriving and I run around the office with a helmet on and I'm just going to be...
My thing is that I'm obviously looking forward to the gameplay, but the soundtrack, Mick Gordon is a god of just heavy, sonically brutal noise. And he's kind of invented this new genre where it's like, it is thrash metal, it is heavy metal, it is this extremely...
But it's like heavily sampled.
Yeah, metal. And it's like really industrial and it's so good. I'm kind of looking forward to the soundtrack just as much, if not more, than the gameplay. Just everything
that's
out.
I can understand that, but I've kind of, as I said the other day, like I'm going to play the game first and then go through the soundtrack because I love feeling that music in the moment for the first time.
Oh, yeah,
and then
getting
to hear more, like getting to hear the punches of it more so without all the gunplay over the top. But I've watched bits and pieces of it. I've watched some gameplay when there was a big hands-on and like a ton of different YouTubers released like their own 15 minutes of gameplay. I saw a bunch of different things, but I've been trying my best not to go too deep into this because I want to go in pretty blind.
That was the best thing about the 2016 one, was that we didn't really expect much, and then it was
everyone was just like, oh, it's a reboot, it's going to be pretty mediocre, and it turned out to be one of the best FPSs ever made. So I'm just so unbelievably excited.
It looks perfect. It looks like they know exactly what they're doing with it as well.
I think it sucks to think that back in 2016 Doom lost out on Game of the Year so many in so many places because of Overwatch.
Not on WhatCulture.com.
And this year it's going to be even worse because it's got so much other incredible stuff to go up against. But we still get it this year, and I think unless something really really surprises me that I'm going to play later this year, I think even before
The Last of
I've
Us
had I mean, I'm excited for The Last of Us Part 2, don't get me wrong, but even with my teeny like 15, 20, 25 minutes of hands-on I had at EGX last year, this is so my game of the year.
Ben Roy friend, where are you feeling? What are you feeling?
Doom 2016 was sold to me after I heard the people that I trust saying that it was excellent. And for me, it was a perfect symphony of violence, like going through there, literally ripping and tearing these demons apart. The only way I can get more health is by killing these fools. And the perfect score, as you two have said behind, like, it's just... every part of that was so excellent. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they delayed it because it sounds like there was so much more platforming in this game before.
Yeah, I wonder what version we would have got if they just put it out.
It sounds like it would have been Doom platformer, and that's kind of like the reason that it actually got delayed, mm-hmm. which is such a good like.
From what I heard, the reason why it was delayed is because apparently by the time it got to November, the game was done. I think it was mm-hmm. like, yeah, we are done with this, but I think they just wanted as much time to make it perfect.
Yeah.
Because the one thing that it can do so well, especially with Doom 2016, is it is basically immaculate.
Yeah.
Like even on launch, one of the best things about the id Tech engine is it's so well optimized for every platform. Like literally today, it's been reported that they're saying it's going to run at 60 FPS solid on the bog standard PS4, on the bog standard Xbox One, but that's how good the id Tech engine is. Mm-hmm. I think I was listening to or watching a video of one of the guys, the game director. I'm annoyed at myself for not remembering his name. Hugo Martin. That's
absolute
his name.
Legendary
Hugo. I had the other guy. What's his name? Marty Stratton?
Marty Stratton, yeah.
I had his name in my head, not Hugo Martin. He was saying like they had to like lock off the id Tech 7 engine on PC at like 250 FPS because there were points in that game where they said they could get up to 900 FPS. It's that well optimized.
It makes your eyes bleed.
I'm looking forward to the new enemies as well. Like as well as like the Doom 2 enemies, they're also bringing brand new enemies from it as well. Mm-hmm. I saw a video from him on not to promote, but Noclip.
I love Noclip.
Noclip's great.
I think it's Hugo on there. He was going through them and just the idea that there's so much care and the fact that, oh yeah, you're doing this really well. Well, then we just introduce this demon to make sure we change your gameplay up. And I just need that. I need to be able to run around in the arena for a bit and just punch
That interview or something else I must have seen about it. It might have been from like Digital Foundry on those open days they did where people got 3 hours on with the game. They were saying like, we've got this really dumb concept, but we're going to make it super. We're gonna really put our role into doing it seriously, like making a serious work of this. And I think that's the best thing about 2016 as well. It's big, it's stupid, and Eternal, from what I've played,
it's got a castle in space.
Yeah, it's literally the same thing. It's just big, it's boisterous
with
it's
guitars.
Really
I was gonna
silly.
Say he's got so many guitars.
I know, and that's one of the things I've not looked at is the Doom Slayers like hub.
I've not
looked at any of it. I'm just gonna stay out of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really excited. As much as you know, 2016 was praised for like, hey, here's lore. I don't want this.
No.
I'm really, really excited to see what lore actually gets played into it because there is something.
They
haven't been marketing it with it because they don't want to. It probably make the game look worse if they did. But the fact that there is apparently something there, it's like, oh!
The guy in the first game, 2016, sounded like basically, Optimus Prime?
Samuel Hayden.
Yeah, the main evil guy.
So I was just like, I mean, if we punch him in the face a few more times.
Well, he's in all the trailers, he's in bits hanging from like a ceiling. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see maybe a glimpse of him and then go see the angels and then we fight them as well.
He had the sword and the sword.
The hilt,
What was the Strelid, the spider that you fight at the very end of
Olivia Pierce, the mastermind.
Spider mastermind.
Aren't they going to be like standard enemies in this one now or smaller?
Yeah, there are mini versions of Spider. Again, because they've taken so much inspiration from Doom 2 Hell on Earth, which was about 1994, I think. It was like literally a year after or something stupid like that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of inspiration from that. Coming over and watch it, and I think I got to fight maybe one or two of them when I had my hands on. There weren't many in the gameplay got, but it's like they're so much fun.
Yeah,
I also wonder how much of the I call it Doom of Duty, the Call of Duty sort of type, where it was also Hell on Earth. How much of that they're bringing sort of like the idea of the Hell Earth stuff, like
I was in the original Doom 4 concept that got scrapped. Mm. I think that was completely binned when they did 2016 because they took bits and bits. I think the glory killing concept came from that or something. So there were elements
of
that.
Earth a bit more I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously what we've got.
Yeah,
so,
a lot of the artwork is like skyscrapers falling.
Because I think the bit that we played at EGX was when the Doom Slayer would be leaving, when he's on Phobos and he does the thing with the guy with the key card around his neck. It was that bit through to launching himself in the pod towards the broken Mars. So I didn't play anything on Earth as far as I can remember.
Hmm.
But from what we've seen of Hell on Earth bits, it looks phenomenal.
Thankfully.
Really hyped. But one more question.
Bring it.
Who's watching Doom 2005 to get ready for this? Because
I'm going to see Doom Annihilation.
Because I'm watching this. Never watched that film.
I have played Doom 2016 and completed it on Nightmare, so that's me ready.
I'm going to watch the rock classic.
I'm going in on my first playthrough on Ultraviolence. I'm not having hurt me.
Oh, sweet Lord Rich.
Miss me with that weak stuff. Come on. Ultraviolence is how I'm going.
You know, I've just got out of Last of Us Grounded mode, so you know.
So I'm playing Last of Us on the easiest difficulty.
I'm going to be on easy or whatever the hell the easiest thing is, so I can just
don't hurt me, Daddy.
Along. Yeah, don't hurt me, Doomy. I just want to get along with the music. Anyway, we also have the hashtag WCGP where you can go across on Twitter and leave all sorts of questions and thoughts and bits and bobs. So this one is from Jack Dale. We can end on this very quickly. What are your guys' favorite movie video game tie-ins? His are Lord of the Rings PS2 games, Revenge of the Sith and The Incredibles. I'm gonna second the Lord of the Rings games.
Return of the King, I got every character up to level 20. Mm-hmm. Even Frodo. Even damn Frodo. How long that took. Just the beginning, that Frodo game opened perfectly. Just Gandalf coming down the hills, like swiping through all the Uruk-hai, like redid the Helm's Deep bow. They didn't have the weird, crappy bit in the Two Towers where they changed the Helm's Deep wall to make it a bit better.
Right, yeah.
I just... Excellent game, through and through.
I think for me, it's not really necessarily... It just says, movie, video game tie-ins. If we take the James Bond license, I would shout
Nightfire.
Well, I was going to say Agent Under Fire and Nightfire. Like, for me, those were my GoldenEye. Like, that was the ones that I played with my friends, four-player split screen. And that made just as much of a mark on me as everyone talks about GoldenEye making with them.
Obviously, of course, OG GoldenEye as well.
Yes, oh yeah, obviously that too. But he was on about PS2 games, but still.
Everything or Nothing? Perfect, like a really good, like bring Jaws back, bring a few other things back from
what
James
the
Bond.
Hell was that thing where they rebooted GoldenEye and it was GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
I think that was on
Rogue Agent.
Rogue Agent.
Where somehow Dr. No, Goldfinger, and Francisco Scaramanga all came together to take out Bond and steal the world.
But their whole thing was to make a guy that has a golden eye because they were just like, well, it's in the name. Which movie based PS2 games are you a fan
PS2?
Of?
PS2? Is it specific?
PS2?
Oh, but it's not PS2.
You have a Bugs Life? Actually, you can't. That was PS1.
I'm properly echoing literally the news earlier about the Harry Potter RPG stuff. I would say that I love the Harry Potter tie-in games, but for me personally, it's the PS1 versions of Philosopher's Stone and Chamber of Secrets. Everything from that were either on PS2 or Xbox 360, unfortunately.
The PS1 one was when that character model of Hagrid started going viral.
I love the PS1 games, and literally after doing the news with Ash earlier and talking about them very briefly and saying that they were my favourite ones, I literally went back and I listened to the soundtrack today while I was doing some artwork and stuff. So I'm just I love those. I love the PS2 ones as well. They're really good. I think Order of the Phoenix was the one that really opened up Hogwarts quite literally to explore and stuff. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, the movie tie-ins are the PS1.
Revenge of the Sith wasn't that bad either.
No, yeah, there was very
Lego
rare...
Star Wars overall, pretty banging.
Yeah. I was going to say Jedi Power, but
when's
that was on
when's
PS1.
When's the Skywalker saga coming out? When? Generally,
well, the Lego one.
The Lego one.
I don't know. Doom's in 11 days.
Okay, let's worry about it.
It's fine. But yes, you can also head over to that hashtag WCGP and let us know all sorts of questions and things, and we'll try and get around to them in due time. But for now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Doom.
And Rich Hudson.
Rip and tear, everyone.
And we'll catch you next time.
See you in 11 days.
Bye.
Star.
There it is.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.